Clayton. John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light, Washington's most refreshing beer.
Now, here's a six-pack of questions.
It's draft talk. Professor, how are you?
Great. Well, it was a great day today. We had the supplemental draft. I mean, you can always, obviously, now the NFL office is once again open for business.
Yes, it is. And you hear two cornerbacks were selected. This is the first time in, what, 3 years?
Yeah,
we've had
years.
Players taken in the supplemental draft.
And, John, you're excited about it?
I am. In 2015 was, and of course, that's a player who's on the Seahawks right now, Isaiah Battle from the Rams. You know, he was taken in a supplemental pick. But this is the best supplemental draft, really, since, I guess, what, 2012 and Josh Gordon. You know, so Sam Beal, 6'1 cornerback from Western Michigan, he goes to the Giants, and the Giants gave up a third-round pick. And then one of the best names you could have, Adonis Alexander, a 6'2 and change quarterback or cornerback, he ends up going to the Washington Redskins.
With Adonis, there were some questions about character concerns, correct?
Yeah, drug issues and that.
I thought that he might fit what Seattle wanted to do, but obviously the Seahawks weren't interested. He went in the sixth round, and it's kind of funny how the supplemental draft works. Oakland won. They had the first option, right?
Right.
But then it goes through. It's like, anybody going to give up a first round for this player, first round player for this round, first round for this player? It's like an auction, right?
Well, no, what it is that they give you a lottery, and it's based, and you get more balls on it the more you lose. And so, you know, Cleveland has the most chance to get it. But what ended up happening, the Oakland Raiders ended up with the first pick. And, you know, that was interesting. And the Giants ended up with the third pick. The Jets had the second pick. So you have kind of a weighted type of lottery, and you have that all the way through. So the Raiders had the first pick in each of those rounds.
Who are the best supplemental picks? The Boz here, we always remember, because he sent a letter to teams saying, do not pick me. And the Seahawks picked him anyway. Steve Walsh, who was a quarterback, I remember him being in the supplemental draft as well. Who have been other big supplemental draft picks?
Well,
Bernie Kosar?
This was not a good one, but Dave Brown, like about 1984, he was a first round
The quarterback.
Guy. Yeah, the quarterback, and you know that one didn't work out too well. You have, Bernie Kosar was one. I mean, there's been a bunch, but of late, you know, because I guess what happens now is that colleges are a little bit better as far as identifying who's going to be in and who's not going to be in, and so because of that, you now have a better chance of not having too many guys, and you're not going to have a good crop. And then what's also changed is the fact with the 2011 collective bargaining agreement, it's much, much different as far as what you can get, because if you get a guy, he doesn't have any OTA experience, he hasn't really trained for the season, and you're getting him, throwing him into training camp and hoping that he can come and do something for you. And for the most part, you don't know if that's going to be a success story or not.
Now, John, the history of the supplemental draft, because we talked about it today on your show. How they did it, I'm 99% sure this was how they did it. There was like a fishbowl or a big bucket. And if you were the best team, which that year was the Giants, you got one little New York Giant helmet keychain. Mm-hmm. And then if you were the worst team, you got 28, because there's 28 teams in the league at that time.
Right.
And the Seahawks, I think they had like 16 in there or something. Or maybe it was – no, they finished – out of the playoffs in 86, but they had a 10-6 record, I think.
Right.
So they were like they had like 8 or 9 or something, or maybe 10 in there. So it wasn't very likely. When did that change? When did that sort of format change? Do you remember?
It's just been adjusted slightly, but again, it's almost like the same procedure right now. So if you were the Philadelphia Eagles, I mean, you probably get one selection, and if you're the Cleveland Browns, you probably get 32. I don't know exactly how they weight it, but they still weight it. And so it's not that much different.
Yeah, and they're just not using a fishbowl and keychains.
No, 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 no. A little more sophisticated than that.
All right, hey, John, the other thing you asked me today, and I'll turn around and ask you, since it's our show, who do you think is going to be the Seahawks' new enforcer? And, you know, I would say it doesn't necessarily have to be on defense.
No, I don't think there is going to be one. I mean, because when you really think about it, I mean, you know, you got, I mean, not they're different personalities, but, I mean, Bobby Wagner is a nice guy. KJ Wright is a nice guy. I mean, he's not going to be, you know, as animated as, say, a Richard Sherman, a Michael Bennett, some of the guys like that. He's not, they're not going to be as physical without Cam Chancellor. That doesn't mean, because again, it's rare to have somebody like a Cam Chancellor. I mean, he was such a unique player that, you know, he offered something that's not there. But I know we were talking about it. I mean, do you need to have an enforcer? It's right. Nice to have it, but if you don't have it, can you survive? And I say you can.
Yeah, and that's the thing, you know, some teams just don't have the personality where you have a guy like that. And one of the things for you guys, I already told John this, but, you know, when I was in Denver, we had Simon Fletcher, Carl Mecklenburg, and Simon Fletcher just had his, I think, put in the Ring of Fame there in Denver, Steve Atwater, Dennis Smith, who I think was the hardest hitter in the league. You know, there was a lot of really good, you know, alpha males on that team, but it wasn't like one guy everybody looked up to. You know, it was kind of every team has a different personality. You know, how about Dwayne Brown? You know,
on the offensive side,
I mean,
I don't think he's a, I mean, you could maybe say DJ Fluker, but again, is that going to be physical enough as a guard? I mean, you know, Dwayne Brown's a very good athlete, and I think he's a very good left tackle. He still went to the Pro Bowl last year, even though he missed half the season. But I don't know. I don't know if there's a real enforcer on this team, and I still wonder, do you have to have an enforcer on this team?
Yeah, I'll be curious.
Not necessarily.
I'll be curious to see how Dwayne Brown's personality rubs off. Being around for a whole year, and he's a guy who's got a lot of respect around the league, someone who's very confident and secure in himself, what he's done in his career. He's not kind of a young and up-and-coming player. Like, I could see him stepping into a role as a real older statesman on that team.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder what's going to happen with his contract, John.
Again, my philosophy, and maybe I'm wrong on this, is that you know they're going to try to look at it and try to wait to see how they get some of the other deals done, because what they need to do is get cap room from him. And I'm not saying taking money away, because obviously he's going to get a raise, but they've got $9.75 million cap room tied up in him, and depending on how much you need with deals either to Tyler Lockett or to whoever, that's I think going to dictate which way that's going to go.
Seahawks are 2 weeks away from reporting for training camp, John. I'm assuming, though, that the first two teams that'll be reporting will be the Ravens and the Bears, since they're playing in the Hall of Fame game on August 2nd.
Yeah, I think it's like, I know it's about a week, maybe 10 days away for the Bears. And believe it or not, I think that Raven rookies have to show up today, which is very strange.
Nothing much expected for the Bears this year, though, right?
I don't think so, no. Because what I look at is that do they have enough on offense? I mean, they're getting better on defense. I mean, Vic Fangio put together a top 10, top 11 defense for statistics last year. But, they had an inexperienced quarterback. I don't know how good Mitch Trubisky is going to be. I really don't. I still kind of wonder, how good he is. And so that's still up for grabs, and they'll have to kind of study that. I think there's still another draft or two away, and, if that's the case, I mean, they've got a new coach. I think he's a bright, good young coach, but, they've got a lot of work to do.
Professor, there's some reports out of there. I saw it from Michael McCarthy of Sporting News that Fox is talking to Jeff Fisher about being part of their broadcast team, which there's nobody that would have more insight into quarterbacks like Case Keenum, Jared Goff, Nick Foles, like all those guys that he had on his team that he couldn't win with.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see. Do you see him being a good commentator?
I do. Well, and particularly, with his experience, I mean, I think that he's got that kind of gruff voice. He's great at talking football. And remember, I mean, you're talking about one of the co-chairmen of the competition committee, and there's such a rush right now to go ahead and get rules analyzed. They've got now every network has their former official, their former referee. That's been all loaded up. And he can come in and, I think, give good evaluations. He'll study the tape of all the teams. I think he can be pretty good at it.
Hey, so Sark lost his $30 million wrongful termination lawsuit against USC.
Right.
He got zero, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Nada. Zilch.
Mm-hmm.
Zippo.
That was going to be a tough lawsuit to win, to say that they should have known that I had a drinking problem when they hired me, or I don't know exactly how you're able to say you're wrongfully terminated at that point when you insist that you didn't have a drinking problem at different points and then step away because you do have... It's really hard, and I have a lot of compassion for people that have substance abuse issues, but arguing that you shouldn't have been fired when you did what Sarkisian did, to me, is a pretty tough sell.
It is, and obviously you knew that he was fighting an uphill battle going into that case, but when you're talking $20 million, I mean, you just don't want to say, well, I don't think a judge is going to go for this, so you want to try to go for it, but there's some cases that you can see, it's like, okay, you're not going to have a real good chance to win, and this one he did, and, you know, he didn't live up to his part of the contract. I mean, he, you know, cost them, and so now he has to kind of pay the price, but, you know, fortunately he's moved on. He seems to have cleaned up a lot of things in his life, which I think is great, but now it's a matter of just trying to get that offense better and put the case aside.
I'll tell you what, you know, somebody that goes through that and makes things right, and I've said this before, when I was at Merrill Lynch, it was like when you would ask consumers about certain companies, like the company that never did wrong, you know, was sometimes rated lower than a company that did wrong but then made it right. You know, it's like if you have a defect, they do the recall, they make sure, you know, they take care of it for you, and you're like, wow, that was great. When really, in reality, it's better that you never have any kind of a defect or problem at all. But when somebody makes it right, it just, I don't know, it has kind of a rubber band effect, and it feels like Sark is doing that, which is pretty cool because it was pretty bad mm-hmm. for him. You know, I remember when USC, when he was doing that let's go thing, and, you could see he was clearly intoxicated and everything.
Yeah, Danny did an impression of that.
Yeah. Let's go!
Mr. Compassionate.
Let's go!
Is that why you were smiling earlier? Because we had some fun. We didn't know at the time, though. Yeah. In Danny's defense, we didn't know. We thought he was just being a jackass.
I'll say this, too. If you do something like that and then you come out and say, I don't have a drinking problem, I think it's fair game to make fun of you. Like, honestly, yeah. And I'm being completely truthful, like, that, if you say that, and, hey, I hope he stays sober and has a great, I always thought the lawsuit stuck out as something that doesn't quite jibe with the idea of accountability, that if he's saying, because his argument was that he should have been allowed to go in and get treatment for alcoholism and step away from the team like that and then come back to the job, and my answer would be, like, look, man, there are only so many of those jobs that exist, and I don't think you can continue to function in that job if you have to step away. And part of the accountability of it is you lose that job, and it's not like they come back and take money back from you, but should you be paid while you're going to do that? And I would say no, that's part of the price you have to pay by doing that. I don't feel bad for him that he lost that lawsuit.
No, but I still think that it's up to him to be able to do it. I mean, for family reasons and everything else. I mean, you're talking $20 million. And it's like, you know, if there's a glimmer of hope, and I'm sure that attorney said, oh, yeah, we might be able to argue this. I mean, you knew it was going to be a long shot, but I don't see the problem of trying to fight it. You're just going to accept that you're going to lose.
John, the 425, the Coors Light text line, wonders who will have the biggest first-year impact, Schottenheimer on offense or Norton on defense?
I think Schottenheimer on offense. I mean, I think the defense is still going to be passable, still be pretty decent, but I think the biggest impact is going to be, you know, what Brian Schottenheimer does with the running game. I mean, you can almost make the argument that, you know, Mike Solari's impact might be bigger than even Brian Schottenheimer, because if he can get the offensive line blocking well. But here's where the big difference is. In fact, I know I just wrote about this for 710sports.com, is that the key is trying to get somewhere close to what they had in the Marshawn Lynch days. And what did they have? They had a running tack where you would have between 500 and 525 carries. You know, you would have over 2,000 yards. And if you can do that with a decent defense, then your run your point differential, because always now with baseball, you go run differential, but your point differential is going to be, you know, anywhere between 80 and 140. And if that's the case, I mean, now you're on that 11-win plateau. Because if you score more points than you give up, I mean, if you go over the sabermetrics formula, you know, the more you get, the more wins you can get. And so you go back in the last 2 years, it was 403 and 408. You know, their differential was like was 34 and 14. And so now you're going into being a 9 or an 8-win team when the games are close. And of course, the big problem that they had, you know, at the end of three quarters, they were always, I mean, for the most part, trailing. And so Russell Wilson had to pull things back in the fourth quarter. Now, if Brian Schottenheimer can get the running game going, get the team off to a faster start, go with a lead into the fourth quarter, then they have a better chance of winning. So I think he has a better chance of making the impact.
John, Steve Keim was arrested for suspicion of DUI on July 4th. Some details have come out about that. But first, I'd like to have a question to see if everybody can guess correctly. when initially pulled over by the officer, how many drinks did Steve Keim tell the officer he had consumed that evening?
Well, I'm hoping he didn't go the Jeremy Stevens route and just said, I had a couple.
He said, Jeremy Stevens' answer was 5 to 6 margaritas over at the Salty Senorita.
Thinking that that would get him off.
Yeah, everybody would say, oh, you're a big guy. That's totally understandable. I bet you're fine. Go on about your evening, sir. Instead, no, he got sent to the pokey. 2 beers.
That's what Keim said?
Keim said 2 beers. Isn't that the standard when you get pulled over?
Sure.
Yeah, he said he was director of security and not the general
manager.
Yeah,
that didn't go over too well.
No, that's absolutely
maybe he thought that pulled more weight with the law enforcement community.
Yeah, that he would say that.
Director of security.
And then he mentioned an officer who he'd worked with before, and it turned out that that officer had passed away about 4 years ago. So I don't think that earned him any points either.
The NFL, John, how are they with executives as opposed to? Because I think there was somebody in Denver a few years ago.
Yeah, Tom Heckert.
Yeah, that pretty much as harsh. I mean, does the NFL have any kind of special fines for executives or people around the team like they do the players, or is it? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, Tom LaWand, who was in Detroit, he ended up getting a suspension of like 30 days and probably a couple $100,000 of fines. And I know it doesn't keep him away from games, but what it does, it keeps him away from doing any work for the team at a very important time. You know, figuring if he's going to be guilty in this, his sentence would probably come in, or, you know, his sentence from the league would come in sometime in late August. And that's when you're involved in your cutdowns, you're getting your scouts, getting the information about the draft. I mean, all those things. And of course, you know, finding players to get injuries, and they have a very competent guy in Terry McDonough who can at least maybe fill in. But if indeed he's going to be found guilty of this, he can probably expect to miss a month.
We do have one correction, and this just came out from the Chandler Police Department, that Steve Keim, he was arrested on suspicion of DUI. He did not tell the officer that he was the director of security.
It was
a misunderstanding. The officer thought that's what Keim had said, but after they reviewed the footage, Keim had actually said that Sean McKenzie was the director of security.
Okay. The DUIs are no joke. Okay, but I just did a segment with Dory, and there was a guy who was pulled over with a bottle of bourbon, and he said, I'm not drinking while driving because I'm only drinking out of the bottle when I come to a complete stop. That was his...
Oh, my God.
That was his defense
there. Yeah.
That's awful.
When I stop at stop signs. Oh. Again, it's no laughing matter, but there are stupid people out there.
There are.
I don't know if you know that.
I saw one. He was the local DJ here. He had posted a picture on Twitter of somebody. It was a urinal that said that this was used, recycled rainwater's used, saving $450,000 or 450,000 gallons of water a year. But do not drink out of the urinal. And his observation, vitamin D's, was that if they're going to want to drink out of the urinal, maybe we should just go ahead and let them.
Yeah, right.
Kind of a weird thought.
Yeah, it is.
Hey, Professor, are you excited about the Cleveland Browns being on Hard Knocks? What do you think? I am, because I think it's going to be fun to see what's going on with that 0-16 team, how they're going to get things changed around and going behind the scenes with them. What do you think the best part of that will be?
To see, you know, Baker Mayfield and how he adapts to the team, you know, see if Jarvis Landry is going to be as, you know, making as many comments as he has, you know, because he's been pretty talky, and just kind of, you know, seeing the thing. But I tell you what, I talked to Joe Howley today. I don't know, you know the Joe Howley story? He's an offensive lineman who had been in Atlanta most recently with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and the body just broke down. I mean, he had so many surgeries, no ligaments in both knees, and he decided, I got to get out of football. And so what he did is that he's now driving, you know, he broke up with his girlfriend. He's taking a year and just driving around the country. He's now been doing this for 3 months, and he's going to do it for the full year. But one of the things that he said is that it caused more problems probably than it was worth, because what ends up happening is some of the players start play acting to the camera and then losing concentration. And so he thinks, I mean, for the Bucs, it may not be good. And maybe that's going to be the case for the, you know, the team that has won one game in 2 years.
John, Connor Barwin wants to get on a playoff team. What do you think he's going to get? What's he worth out there? And who do you think he ends up with?
You know, I still wonder if he's a candidate, and this may be saying something, that he's not signed. I don't even know if he's offered, you know, because I think he could be a fit on the Seahawks because he can play defensive end or he can play outside linebacker. But, you know, he's got a couple teams in mind because I talked to some people that talked to him, and so he's just kind of waiting this out. But he's also looking for decent money. But you know, you can see how these most recent deals are. They're either minimum salary, or if you're a little bit lucky, maybe you can get like that deal that went for Byron Maxwell. It's $2 million, but it may cut only about $1.5 million under the cap, because you'll have like $500,000 in per game play time, and if you play, you're on the 46-man roster, you'll get that money. But if you're not, so I think right now the value doesn't equal what he thinks he's going to get. But hey, it's too late right now. He's going to only get what he can get.
He's a second rounder out of Cincinnati. This is going to be his ninth season. Guy's got 54.5 sacks. He's a good player. Only thing I ever had a problem with Connor Barwin, really goofy haircut.
Yeah.
Really goofy. He shaves the sides and has this big bouffant going on up top.
So if you would have had a choice.
Who do you think you are with that haircut?
Yeah,
I've been known to support a bouffant from time to time.
Yeah, but we criticized you and you corrected it.
Now, who would you rather have, an Elvis Dumervil, a Connor Barwin? Which type of guy would you rather have?
Well, I don't really know much about Elvis Dumervil. The only thing I ever remember about him, John, was that didn't his agent forget to fax something?
Yeah, they got the offer in a little too late.
And he missed out.
The paperwork, and so nothing happened, and he ended up losing a lot of money and going to Baltimore.
Yeah, it turned out to be an okay deal for him, though, or did he end up losing a lot of money?
He lost a lot of money.
Yeah, so, look, Barwin, I mean, I don't know if the Seahawks or if he'd be interested, but five sacks the last couple of years with the Rams last year, and 14.5 with Philly, 11.5 one year with Houston, so not a bad player. And there's some pass rush for you, but I'm not sure if that's the kind of guy that the Seahawks would go after.
No. Hey, John, according to Pro Football Focus, Doug Baldwin has the most yards. I paused there for you.
I appreciate it. It's teamwork.
Doug Baldwin has the most yards from the slot the last 3 years, 2,315 yards. He's going to turn 30 in September. We talk about Earl Thomas concerns about guys when they get in their 30s. What about wide receivers? Do they typically drop off at 30, or they continue into their early 30s being effective?
They start to drop off more. It's more like 31 than it is 30. But if you're a slot guy, because what ends up happening is that outside guy almost now has to move more inside. And I think the classic example is Larry Fitzgerald. Whether it was wise or not, he moved to the slot, moved inside, trying to work the routes more than the athletic ability. And you're talking about a Hall of Fame guy. But, I mean, you can see there's drop-offs at the age of 31, but for slot guys, I mean, they can kind of continue along. But again, the clock keeps ticking, because when you look at it, I mean, the two oldest wide receivers currently in the league are Larry Fitzgerald and Brandon Marshall, and they're 34 years old. And the chances of getting 1,000-yard seasons really starts going down after the age of 33. And so that's going to be a quick time. But, no, I think you can still see some good years ahead. But, at some point you have to start wondering about, when those numbers will start falling down. But, no, he's still in a good spot.
Professor, have you talked to Pac-Man?
I have not talked to Pac-Man. He's not called.
Have you seen him on video?
I have not seen him on video, and I've not seen him get punched.
Yeah, have you heard what happened?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, he landed. He knocked a dude out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't think you should mess with Pac-Man.
No.
I think it was a very bad. Have you seen this, Jim?
I did. I saw a much bigger guy he knocked down.
Yeah, he did.
The craziest person wins in fights like that, especially. Yeah, it was in the Atlanta airport, man. It's amazing, John. Do you think people go up and, prod him knowing they're going to get a reaction, or he just seems to have trouble following him?
He usually gets caught on video in most of these. That's the weird part about it.
Well, that's what happens when you're in a busy airport. God, there must have been 1,000 people there, and here he is brawling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, how weird is that, though? It's just kind of very strange.
Well, I'll say this. The guy that he punched, the guy that he punched is the one that got arrested, because he was the one that started the confrontation, and then he got knocked out, and he's probably going to get fired because he was working at the airport. So I think that that's a series of defeats that he suffered. He got whooped, and he got arrested, and he'll probably get fired.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's probably not a good day.
Not a good day, no. I think that that one did not go the way that I think he wanted it to go. But, it's always Pac. Remember the one that he was walking down the street in Cincinnati and some girl came over and started yelling at him, and he ended up, almost hitting her?
Yeah, it's bad news. Pac-Man trouble seems to follow him, and it's documented. Mm-hmm. John, we always love talking to you. We'll catch up with you tomorrow.
Okay, sounds good.
If you missed any of today's Cold Hard Facts, brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light, Washington's most refreshing beer, download the podcast, 710sports.com. We're getting closer and closer to finding out whether or not Gene Segura is going to be on the All-Star team. The Mariners have also got to bounce back. You're starting to worry a little bit. We'll talk about that next.
This is Danny, Dave, and Moore.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming everywhere.
Everywhere.
At 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
It's the Walker.
Harden is back.
All right, Matt Harden has returned to us.
The little tart.
The all-time religion lives!
Matt Harden. I heard him giving you a hard time, Harden, Rick Riz and Goldsmith, and I'm like, yeah. I texted Riz. I go, that's when you know you love somebody, when you give them heat. They're giving Harden a hard time. It's funny.
It is the happy hour. It's brought to you by Heritage Distillings, BSB, their brown sugar bourbon. We have a starter for tomorrow's game in Anaheim. And that's important because that's the spot Felix was supposed to have. James Paxton has been bumped up a day. So Paxton going to be on the mound. He'll get an extra start. It means a couple things. A, he's going to be really rested if they decide to use him in the All-Star game. He's going to be eligible if he gets picked.
That'd be right on his regular day then.
Yes. So that with an eye toward that, he would be available, which would help him. And there are going to be some guys. I know Justin Verlander is scheduled to start, I believe, the 15th. He's not going to be pitching for the American League if that's the case.
He probably appreciates it, too, that he doesn't have to pitch there in Colorado. I don't think any pitcher likes pitching there.
No, I don't think anyone does. Do you feel like... I don't think pitchers, it's not like a pitcher looks forward to it, but I don't think anybody wants to buck their turn. I don't think it's like, hey, you know what, I really would prefer not to. But
no,
you're right.
I don't think he lobbied for it or anything, but maybe if you asked him, maybe he'd say, well, yeah, I'd rather pitch in Anaheim than Colorado. Although you pitch against the Rockies, you don't have to face Trout.
What about the pitchers, though, that are in the Colorado system? I mean, do you think it's that big of a deal to him? Or is it like, well, my career's not going anywhere here, or is it that big of a thing? I would think also, you know, it might be a challenge for you.
Yeah, I think it's a bigger deal for pitchers who are already in the league, not for a developing prospect, because, look, you're trying to make it to the major leagues.
Yeah, you don't care how.
That sort of, hey, I don't know if I'm in the best. I think for an existing, and I just think of Mike Hampton, who was here. He was the bullpen coach last year. For the Mariners, and I remember when he went to Colorado, and it had a pretty extreme impact on his career, where he went from being a Cy Young candidate kind of pitcher to someone who just didn't. Whether it's that your curveball doesn't get the bite because of the altitude, or the fact that the thin air just means that balls rocket out of there. I know they have the humidor now to make the balls to make it so they're not quite as dry as they would be otherwise, but it is. Mariners will have a game this weekend, our series this weekend in Colorado, but first they got to get through the Angels. And look, Mariners have lost 4-6, and if there's a string that can be drawn through them and to connect to those results, it's that they're not scoring enough runs. They got 3 runs last night, but all of those came on a first inning home run by Mitch Haniger, and this comes on the heels of a series against Colorado at home where they scored one run, and then 6, although Ryan Healy himself accounted for 5 of those runs. They're missing their big bat, and I'll go back to it, that anybody who wondered where Robinson Cano will fit, he'll fit just fine at number 3 in that lineup once he's eligible to return in mid-August.
Yeah, looking at the lineup tonight, and I guess, you know, it's not too bad, but Ben Gamel is hitting 6th and playing left field, and he's 1-for-15 in July. He was so hot, though, there for a while, so you expect him to come out of it. Heredia has some concerns about him. You love him in center field, though, and we saw another reason why last night with taking that double away from Trout. It looked like he was going to hit the yellow line. I like the way Trout signaled out to him to acknowledge a great catch there by Heredia. And so he's hitting 8th tonight, and then you got Freitas. And you got 2 backup catchers. I like seeing Herman, though. Herman in the batter's box, I like seeing him. Freitas is okay. Zunino, Shannon was saying, she tweeted like 20 minutes ago, he's making good progress, could be ready shortly after the All-Star break. Some good news about Erasmo Ramirez, too. But, no, I think it's justifiable right now to have a little concern about the Mariners' run production.
What's the good news on Erasmo? He's doing his job?
Yes, he is, Dave. He threw a sim game in Everett close to being ready for a rehab assignment. Sure takes pitchers a long time, doesn't it? You go from long toss to sim games.
Yeah. I like it when they throw off a mound.
Yeah.
When they talk about their throw off a mound for the first time, and that's some big hurdle that they have to clear out. Flat ground toss, long toss.
Long toss
is another one.
You're a little nervous? I mean, these two teams pretty good. It would be such a bummer going into this All-Star break with them only getting, you know, what if they only get one win out of the next four games? It'd be kind of a bummer, five, I should say. So, and they're both pretty good teams, and they gave them trouble at home. And, you know, look, they're both, I think, similar. The Angels both have really good players, same with the Rockies, and then they're both a little bit over 500, and they're still alive. They're still scrapping. Just made me a little bit nervous last night. Our buddy from Budget Blinds, he came in, Emmett, and said that he thinks this whole All-Star thing is maybe a distraction. You know, I don't know if you feel that way, Jim, because I know you're sort of against voting for All-Stars.
But, stuffing
well,
the
no,
ballot
just
box.
Against, yeah, oh. Against thousands of votes from the same person.
That's exactly right. You shouldn't penalize someone for their enthusiasm.
America.
Well, that's the way the rules are set up.
That's
and
exactly
so, yeah,
right.
So, I mean, well, I heard the guy from the Mariners marketing office. It wasn't Greg Green. It was someone else there, a younger guy. And yeah, what they've done is really, it's great. And they've capitalized on it. They have their players. Felix was even out in front of Safeco Field with passersby there. And
yeah, bringing him in to vote.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, I think it's cool what they're doing. I don't really agree with the process is all. But they're just taking advantage of the process as is.
It'll be exciting to see. We'll find out at 5 o'clock. We'll have that announcement for you as Major League Baseball says who wins the final vote. Gene Segura was ahead as of yesterday. The polls are closed. We don't have any exit poll data to take you live for some updates about what has happened. Who is it? The Wolf Blitzer is not in the situation room ready to update Gene Segura. But we'll see if he is the final one that is selected. The Mariners.
We can maybe talk to Darlene. She's, you know, MSNBC. Maybe they've got some
Darlene is
results.
Such a sweetheart. I can't tell you how much I enjoyed the fact that it was two sweet ladies who were talking about how many times they voted, contrasted against Jim, was like, you should only vote once for one vote per person. This is good. You see these two sweet little ladies talking about how much they'd voted for Gene?
It's cute.
Yeah.
Very cute.
It does. Don't forget, you can win a pair of Seahawks season tickets. We're going to start this contest next Monday. It's 6 degrees of Danny, Dave, and Moore. We've got a list of 100 celebrities or quasi-celebrities. I think everybody constitutes a celebrity on there. Jose Canseco, is he a celebrity?
Oh, yeah.
Is he an oddity?
Big time.
Yeah.
How about Tonya Harding?
Tonya Harding is on there also. I would
ex-presidents?
I would describe her as a Northwest classic, Tonya Harding. That's exactly right.
You get bonus points if you can get Galooly to call in, too?
No, I don't think Galooly's on the list.
He's not?
No, Jeff Galooly did not make the
list. I'll give somebody bonus points if he calls.
You will?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know how much your credit gets.
He's the crowbar guy, isn't he?
No. Yeah. Jeff Galooly was her ex-husband. Sean Eckhart was the one that hit it. And it wasn't a crowbar so much as one of those extending telescoping rods.
Really? It was a professional.
Yeah, it was.
I thought it was just like a straight up lead pipe.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. Like in the conservatory with Professor Plum. Why the hell was there a candlestick in that game? Clue?
Candlestick? You can kill somebody with a candlestick.
Beat somebody over the head with it.
That is really morbid. Remember that was a game I played as a kid. Like, who wants someone worried about a candlestick being used to bludgeon someone?
There was a gun. There was a rope. What else?
Can you name all the
revolver?
People? So you got Plum, Colonel Mustard.
Colonel Mustard.
There's a peacock.
Who's Mrs.
Yeah,
Miss Scarlet?
Miss Peacock.
Mrs. Peacock. Yeah, she was the librarian looking
lady. Isn't there Mr. Green?
Mr.
Too?
Green.
Look at Jim. You got them all down, don't you?
We'll see if Jim gets the rest of them by the time we get back here on Danny, Dave, and Moore.
Tapper near the plate, and everybody's in play. They both advance. The throw's away. The Astros are going to win it. The Astros are going to win. Unbelievable. A ball that went about 5 feet in front of home plate. Alex Bregman has two of those this year. That one was shorter than the one previous. You got to be kidding me. The defense has been awful for the Oakland A's, but how do you lose a game on that?
I called it. This is what Justin Verlander said after that play on Twitter. Quote, Bregman's going to tap it foul, going to spin back fair. Catcher picks it up to tag Bregman, but he's going to matrix it, which then the ball is thrown at the ump. Catcher's going to pick it up and rifle it to the back of Breg's head. The ball goes into right field. Tucker scores. Game over.
I just saw it for the first time. I know most people have seen what happened there. That ball was just cued off the end of the bat right there, basically in the batter's box, and it went a little down the first base line and then curly cued back into the field of play. I feel bad for the catcher, though.
Why?
Well, because he had the ball, and then he had the ball, and Bregman was still basically in the batter's box and got out of his way, and then LaCroix goes to tag him, and then then he loses control of the ball, and yeah, then he throws it into right field.
Why do you feel bad for him?
Because I used to be a catcher. I like catchers. I always stick up for catchers. That's a tough way to lose a game.
Well, I like how Bregman backs up, too, and he's still got the bat in his hand.
Mm-hmm.
That was a pretty heads-up play by him, and that's why you go hard on every single play, just in case something weird happens. I bet you a lot of people would have just stopped there, you know, a lot of players.
What do you think Robinson Cano would have done?
He would have got tagged out.
Probably. You'd have been blowing a bubble, spitting seeds,
yeah.
Walking back to the dugout.
Either that or maybe you would have stayed in the batter's box and allowed LaCroix to go through all these histrionics and then like, ooh, I guess I'm going to run on down.
Well,
it might have worked to his advantage.
He's smooth. We know that.
He's smooth. It would have been like, ha, just like I planned.
I bet he runs harder to first when he comes back. Don't you think?
Why?
Because he's going to feel bad.
Wouldn't
you run harder to first if you're him when you come back?
You know what? I would.
Yeah.
You know what? You're right, Jim. I would, too. I would be very – you'd be humbled, right?
Yeah, and I would be like, all my P's and Q's will be minded.
Right. And, you know, and you just feel like you kind of let your teammates down for 80 games. So, yeah, you're going to hustle and go hard. I don't know if it's going to work for him, though. That's not his game.
I know. You kind of want him to do what works for you. Like, Robbie, that's not you. You're not Johnny Hustle.
Yeah, stop hustling.
We are a communication. I said OP, and I think in the midst of all the, crawled on a slow two, on a slow two coming through the gate, and we got to stop it. I don't think the pitch. Just not the guy I was expecting.
Dan Otero will try to save the day with Joey Votto at the plate. Fly ball, deep right. Naquin won't get it. The Reds will clear the bases. And Joey Votto has delivered a game-breaking three-run double.
That one lands on me.
So he wanted to bring in OP, who is Oliver Perez. But that's not who he ended up bringing in. He brought in OT, Dan Otero.
Dan Otero.
So that he said OP, but they thought he said OT.
But he went left, and Otero's right, correct?
Yeah, and they were facing Joey Votto, who's a left-handed hitter. And they wanted to bring in Oliver Perez, OP, who's left-handed.
So
but
why
the bullpen misheard over the phone.
So why didn't, when the pitcher got out there, why didn't the manager come back and say, you got the wrong guy?
Because once the pitcher gets called, he has to come into the game.
Is that what happened? Because this happened with the Cardinals in the World Series. La Russa
once
with
he's Mott. Announced, he has to face one batter.
Oh, really?
Oh, okay. But they had OT warming up out there.
Yeah.
Right? Because there's a warm-up period.
I got an idea. Maybe don't have stupid nicknames for players. Like, maybe refer to the guy by number or, like, make sure that they hear what you're saying.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'm sure they won't make that mistake again. But the one thing I saw, though, is that Votto was 0-for-4 against Otero.
Oh, so it wasn't a terrible matchup.
It wasn't a terrible matchup. It didn't have the right, righty-lefty. But if you were Francona, you could have said, yeah, I know that I should have gone righty-lefty or whatever it was, but, he was 0-for-4
against
Otero.
You didn't have to cop to it.
And then you didn't have to. You could have got out of it.
I will say this. It appears that I take more diligence ordering a pizza than the Cleveland Indians do in summoning a reliever. Because I'm like, O-T as in Thomas or O-P as in Peach?
Yeah, but sometimes you order the pizza or hamburger with no onions and the guy is an idiot behind the cashier, and he gives you onions anyway.
That only happens in Cleveland.
True. You don't have to say anything, Jim.
That's Pac-Man Jones, or Adam. Like, you could tell the lady he was with was serious, because she was calling him Adam. Adam!
Was that woman was with Pac-Man?
That's correct.
Okay, I thought she was another one of the airport security people.
No, he's with someone. You also knew Pac-Man was serious because I believe he dropped a bag of Popeye's chicken.
Yeah, it looked like, I thought it, yeah, sub sandwiches or something.
Yeah, it looked like Popeye's chicken to me.
Yeah, he dropped food there. But no, but he still probably shouldn't have gotten in a fight, though, right? You think? I mean, what the guy said something disparaging to his girlfriend.
Looked like they were yelling back and forth, and yeah, the guy pointed at him, and then they continued to yell, and then the guy charged at him.
So, like, if you're...
Should anyone get in a fight, really? Like, should...
No.
Yeah, we're living in a society, Jim. But you don't just start fighting at the airport.
Sometimes guys get mad. I would generally say that the person in uniform who charged at the guy to start the fight is in the wrong.
Yeah, you're supposed to be, there's a certain level of professionalism you expect from somebody, especially at the airport.
But especially at the airport.
Where you can't even make a joke about a bomb when you're going through the security line.
I will.
Remember, we had a linebacker from down in San Francisco that got in trouble for
yes,
that.
Yes, he did. He did. Here's the one thing I'll say. If you work at the airport, I think that's a job that could push you to the brink.
Yeah.
People, when they get to the airport, become dumber. I don't know if it's the lines that you stand in and the mentality of lines, but you will see people do so many stupid things at the airport. I try to be a model to them. Like, I try to have my ID out in anticipation of all the questions. And there's some people, I need my ID to fly on the airplane? Yeah, for like 20 years. Yes, yes, you do. You're too stupid to fly. Oh, man, what does the metal detector detect? Metal!
Yeah, like...
Like the big pan full of coins you just took out of your pocket?
Right.
Yeah, that's going to set off the metal detector. You're too dumb to fly on an airplane.
Yeah. It bothers me taking my shoes off still. I can't stand that.
I always
think of that goof that's the reason that mugshot of that crazy guy, you know, that caused everyone to have to do that. And I'm like, okay, thanks. And so, yeah, I always... Do you remember when you leave to go to the airport not to tie your shoelaces?
No, I don't. But that part doesn't bother me.
Before you leave your house,
yeah,
you're like, oh, going to have to take my shoes off.
Yeah.
Why bother tying them?
Jim, it takes 5 seconds to untie them and tie them back.
And then it always seems like...
Oh, man, I tied my shoes.
Seems like I'm always the guy
My entire day is ruined.
I'm always the guy that goes, oh, excuse me, sir, we got to take the wand to you. And, you know, half the time I'm just wearing a T-shirt and shorts and nothing else. I'm like, go ahead, wand away. See what you can find.
I think Jim actually likes
it. And then
Jim likes being wanded.
Let's make sure we don't take 6 ounces of hair gel. Oh, my God. That might blow up something. You know, I've got to take that away, sir. Well, go ahead. That's why I hate flying, man. I just don't do it anymore. I used to do it for a living, and I'd rather just get in that Honda Ridgeline and go somewhere.
Yeah. I'm with you, too. I'd rather drive. But, you know, you can get the clear or whatever.
TSA pre-check.
Pre-check, yeah.
Global entry.
You don't have to go through
all
that.
Way back from Mexico.
You can leave your shoes on.
Yeah, you can.
And you don't have to worry about not tying them at home. You're much more likely to fall on your tea kettle.
Nobody else does that? No, I go to the airport and I'm thinking, okay, I'm not going to tie my shoes because I know I got to take them off.
Are your shoelaces flopping all over the place when you're walking? Are they flopping around or what?
Well, it's like, what, like I got a bomb in my tennis shoe or something, you know? I mean, come on.
There was the tennis shoe bomber.
Yeah, well, yeah, the one idiot, but good God. It bothers me. It does.
That's going to do it for Sweep of the Dows, brought to you by Specialty Insulation. And that wraps up our happy hour, which is brought to you by Heritage Distillings, BSB, their brown sugar bourbon. We're going to take you live, not from the polls, but to the announcement. Did Gene Segura make the All-Star game? We'll find out next.